I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. We're speaking today with Brian Wright. Brian is the author of a new novel slash personal reflection on his experience called The New Pilgrim Chronicles. Brian's a technical writer, mechanical engineer. He's living in New Hampshire, which is where the book is set, and it's about the Free State Project, which he's a participant in. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Brian, tell us a little bit about where the Free State Project comes out of. What are its origins?
All right. Yes. In a little bit of the relationship of the Free State, and at least in my mind, to the entire the world of transhumanism, if you will.
Let's start with Free State, because I don't think most of the Free Staters are transhumanists.
The Free State, yeah, a lot of people won't make those connections, but the Free State is really a simple, relatively simple concept, political movement initiated by a man named Jason Sorens, who was a lecturer, I believe, at Yale. And the idea behind the Free State was to move liberty-minded people to an area, a political subdivision, a state, to focus the energies of these people to effect change, to make up for in numbers, in a sense, what we lack, because we're sort of dispersed, and so that's what led to the Free State Project. New Hampshire was picked, and we currently have about I think the number that we actually have on the ground who have moved, as opposed to those who have pledged, is something on the order of 500. The number who have pledged is on the order of 7,000. The original number that was projected was 20,000. The idea was to get 20,000 people to pledge to move, and at the point that number of pledges had been received, people would, within 1 year, of course this is all voluntary, commit essentially to move to New Hampshire. So, that's the essence of the Free State Project.
Now, when you say liberty-minded, you're talking about libertarianism, folks who are opposed to taxation, want to legalize drugs and prostitution, things like that. And was this an officially endorsed project of, like, the Libertarian Party or any particular libertarian group, or is this pretty much an independent libertarian
project? No, it really isn't. It really isn't endorsed by the Libertarian Party. And, in fact, there's quite a bit of discussion in the forums on New Hampshire Underground, and also on the Free State Project forums, the use of the word libertarian, Jason and the others, the leadership of the organization, basically wanted to focus on just limited government, small government, leaving people alone to live as they choose. So that's right. You if you're a free person, you have the right to use whatever drugs you feel are appropriate. You have the right to make all those decisions. And so we wanted to create we'd like to see a society in which people have the right to live without aggressing upon others.
Now, the reason that New Hampshire got chosen, I presume, had both to do with the fact that it's relatively small and also that its political culture is already relatively libertarian.
That's true. In most respects, there's debate on that, like everything else here. But some people wanted Wyoming. I mean, there's a second Free State Project. There's a concept of it anyway out there. But New Hampshire, I think, is the best choice because of that. It certainly has a history of being, live and let live. They're pretty tolerant. I mean, they don't, for example, it's the only state in the union, as far as I know, that does not have a seatbelt law for adults. All right. I think the seatbelt law does pertain to people under 18, but there's no helmet law. We recently were successful in defeating a ban on smoking, in private establishments, which has been all the rage lately for the people who want to dictate our choices in our health. You know, so you know, it's been there's no income tax, there's no sales tax, no general sales tax. I think there are some particular sales taxes, but so it's a very low government state already. And again, you're right. The one nice thing about the free state is the access you have to the people who actually run the government. You really do have a feeling. It's entirely different. My home state is Michigan. And it's just an entirely different feeling of you being in charge. Even the police in the towns, I mean, a little bit different in the cities. But the largest city in New Hampshire is maybe 120,000 in Manchester. So you have the feeling that you're in charge and that the people in government work for you. So it's really a wonderful feeling.
I've read a little bit about the reaction of folks in New Hampshire to the Free State Project, and as one might imagine, not everyone welcomed you with open arms as the political carpetbaggers coming in to try to colonize their state.
Yeah, that's right. There've been, and of course it's a broad movement, and so you have some characters, and you have some people that probably don't put the best. That a lot of other free staters probably would rather they just kind of went away. You have the people who basically resist the government like entirely, like with civil disobedience and things of those kinds. And then you have on the other side, you have some people who want to work with the Republican Party to work within the system and this sort of thing. But it's been kind of mixed. I mean, if you talk to people. Just that you run into, they pretty much like, they ask why you're there. You know, you just tell them, well, I came here because I'm looking for a place that's more free than where I was. And you don't kind of wear that on your sleeve, that you're with the Free State Project, because yeah, that's right. It does, force sort of a perception that may not be valid. I've been warmly welcomed actually with, the editor of the neighborhood news chain of newspapers, their weekly free papers, and she had an interview done for me, and she wrote an editorial that was just warmly welcoming the Free Staters, and I think some of her fellow journalistic associates, not all of them, were really thrilled about that, but by and large, the people just really like us. I mean, and we like them. It's a beautiful, it's a good relationship.
Well, you mentioned that there was some discussion of whether you should be building alliances with the Republicans. Now, the Reason magazine, Cato Institute, they have traditionally been closer to the Republicans than the Dems, but there are libertarian issues such as the deregulation of drugs, which is more of a Dem issue for you guys than Republican.
Right.
And the rise of the Christian right and the Bush version of compassionate conservatism, which involves a bellicose American foreign policy and a huge budget deficit and expansion of federal powers of surveillance, doesn't seem to be,
right.
Why would you be just talking about going into the Republican Party? It doesn't seem to be a natural match.
Oh, no, I'm just kind of explaining the extremes. From my point of view, the Republican Party is always been really the party of state power. It's just that there are disagreements, but the Democrats, of course, have their own blind spots. For example, I'm just as a generalization, you probably have more Democrats that are in favor of rolling back Real ID or resisting Real ID, which is a federal national ID program, which has got very, very strong totalitarian, prospects. And then those would typically be Democrats who would be on our side there. They would be the libertarians there. On the smoking ban, it was more the Republicans, particularly small business owners, people like that, who felt this was a matter of personal choice. And business decision and things like that. So, but no, I mean, I call it the RCMP. You've heard of Royal Canadian Mounted Police. That's how I like to think of it. But RCMP for me means reason, choice, market, peace. So I've turned into a real peace activist here, and I'm entirely opposed to And I would say that the majority of the people that are in the Free State are anti-war. That wasn't always the case. I think we'll tip the scales pretty easily. We're against the big government, no matter where it rears its head, I guess.
Well, I'm speaking with Brian Wright. He's the author of a memoir. I guess it's more of you built it on the model of Pilgrim's Progress.
Well, I really I hadn't thought of that, but yes, in a sense, I think of it more in terms of a road book, like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and in combination with like common sense. I mean, because it has a journal format, but I'm trying to make it a bit of a manifesto for my vision of what I see as the vision that's kind of been informed by a lot of very, very good people around me. Is what I see as the future of the movement. You know, some things, some principles I think that can really be helpful to us in achieving some kind of a breakthrough so that we can achieve this free, benevolent, rational, prosperous society.
Is it simply descriptive of what you've done so far, or is New Pilgrim Chronicles also speculative about what you hope to achieve in the future?
It's both. The origin of the book was from just because I decided to take that direction with my life, and I moved there. I said, well, I'm a writer. I can share with people who might be interested in coming. This kind of panegyric of how wonderful New Hampshire is. Well, I mean, I tried to be more matter of fact, but yeah, I was kind of like a you are there. Reporter on the street, this is what it's like, slice of life, the experience of New Hampshire, so I could share that with people in like weekly journals. But at the same time, naturally, I'm becoming politically active. In fact, I get involved really early with some peace protests and the peace people in general. And then I move along with some ideas that I've had that just kind of naturally spring out of the activities that I'm doing. So, and those tend to become, and that's kind of like where the whole transhumanism connection comes, because the libertarian movement, and I'm using that advisedly, there's been no real explicit connection made within the movement. There's been no explicit connection made between it, or between this freedom-loving vision that people have and want, and extended life or enhanced life, and I had that tradition, and I wanted to sort of integrate that, and I thought, so I include a few little sections in one of the chapters, and I talk about, in fact, I refer to the WTA, and I refer particularly to Fantastic Voyage. I haven't actually gotten through it yet, but I'm familiar with Ray Kurzweil and Terry Grossman and a little bit with what they're doing, or I guess Kurzweil is doing in AI.
Well, let's unpack some of this for people, because not everyone's going to be familiar with these terms.
Sure.
In the first place, you come to transhumanism from the cryonics connection. When did you become a cryonicist, and how did you hook up with that?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. Many years ago, I probably resisted it initially, but because, I kind of came from a Randian perspective, and Rand has a certain ethic, a view of life where, there's a beginning and there's a middle and there's an end, that's kind of an integrated whole package, and the concept of immortality or indefinitely extending that lifespan was not something that the doctrinaire Randians, certainly not the doctrinaire ones, but most Randians in general, considered. So, but I was always kind of a free thinker, and I gave it some thought, and the more I thought about it, the better it sounded. And then in my neighborhood here, or like say my general geographical neighborhood, there was Dr. Ettinger, Robert Ettinger, who wrote Man into Superman and something else. I can't remember offhand, but the basic premise, and he was an early founder of the cryonics approach, which has come, I think, the chronics approach now is sort of most people that are in the life extension movement or the transhumanist movement probably think of chronics as sort of an insurance policy. I read Eric Drexler, you know, The Engine's Creation, but he had a lot of really good points, and then that's kind of where he brought up the idea of chronics as sort of in that context. But yeah, I and then it's been surprising. I haven't done a lot of reading inside the, you know, the scientists like Ray Kurzweil and so forth. But I've read enough that I understand that the consensus among some very distinguished scholars and writers is that we're fairly close to effective, what do they call it, negligible senescence?
Right. Anti-aging therapies.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, I'm...
You can have it right now if you can stand to drink 100 bottles of wine a day.
Yeah, well, I've also gotten into, you know, I was probably early adopter of several of the... You've heard of Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw, right?
Right, to take 1,000 pills a day. That was their approach.
Right. Well, they were early, though. I mean, you have to give them... Their book was called Life Extension, you know? And it was an early... This was, I think, in the 70s yet. Might have been in the 80s. But they had certain, you know, substances that they liked particularly. I think they got to be a little bit of a cult.
Well, they were also selling the stuff. I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, because I think that they all, you know, starting with Dirk and Sandy, they all tried to ground themselves in the science. But naturally, when you think that something's going to be the next big thing, you're going to want to invest in it yourself, so...
Right, and everybody is all, you know, of course, we're all after the magic pill, and nobody wants to exercise.
Right, well, that was one of the problems with Dirk and Sandy, is that I don't think they ever had a physical regimen of any kind that they recommended. When I read a number of articles about them, and apparently their whole thing was just taking pills.
Yeah, I think so, but... So I've sort of stayed familiar with it, and I don't know when I joined WTA, but it's been a few years now.
WTA is the World Transhumanist Association. By the way, I just today resigned as executive director, and now it's Julia Prisco as the executive director of the WTA. But
okay.
I'm still the secretary, so still involved.
Are you with this other organization, IEET?
Right. The IEET is the think tank that spun off of the WTA, and I'm the executive director of that now.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't, unfortunately, I've been so involved with my political and literary now effort. I haven't done enough reading in that area to really be much of an expert, but at least one thing I have been able to do with the political writing is in a rather, you know, man-on-the-street method, I at least suggest that... Hey guys, this is a good thing. You know, we need to start thinking this way, because the science is way ahead of like what most people think, and you know, we need to start thinking about how we can make our society a healthy one, too. I mean, it's so that people can take advantage of these new life-saving, life-enhancing technologies, and actually create just a better planet, and that's where you start talking about politics. You have to. So
right. Well, I mean, although I'm not a libertarian, I think one of the things that's very interesting about your book and about the Free State Project and the connections you're trying to draw to transhumanism is that in the 19th century, there were a lot of utopian thinkers and communalists, people who were both writing about what a more perfect society would look like that unleashed reason and science and technology and freed it from the strictures of state and religion, and we're actually trying to build those communities, you know, in various communes in New York State and other places. And I think it's encouraging to see that people are willing to make some sacrifices, even if they don't all have the same politics that I do. That they're
yes.
willing to make some of the sacrifices to try to bring that about.
Well, that's true, and I, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. Are you familiar with a man named Neil Postman, who wrote Building a Bridge to the 18th Century?
Right, yes.
That goes back to the Enlightenment. One of the, and I guess it's kind of hard because, you know, I'm out here kind of like trying to push my book, and a lot of people think, I think, within the movement, within the Free State Project, say, well, we already read those journals. They were up on the site. So, you know, there's nothing new in there. But what really happened is I wrote the book. You know, I supplied a lot more, you know, I developed a lot of additional insights that were more universal. I mean, and there are a lot of references, not just to you know, the life enhancement world, but the, you know, the people who like books. I mean, you know, one of the real problems I think we face, and Postman was really, he was right on it, is that people are living in this, you know, stimulus response environment where there is no connection, there's no story. They don't think of themselves as having a narrative. And, you know, I mean, yeah, people read books, don't get me wrong, but they read the internet, but it's like...
But I think the point you're making is very interesting. I'm a sociologist, and one of the explanations for the rise of religious fundamentalism, I think, is that as cosmopolitan, you know, life has eroded the simple verities that lots of people took for granted, people have retreated into these closed belief systems, and we seculars have not spent a heck, and libertarian types have not spent a heck of a lot of time trying to build a new narrative for life that gives it the same kind of meaning that, you know, being a child of God or being a jihadi gives people's lives meaning. By the way, when you mentioned stimulus response, you reminded me that the very first utopian novel I ever read was Walden 2 by B.F. Okay. Skinner, which proposed a utopian society based on behaviorism. And in fact, there are about 8 communities up in New England in various places based on loosely based on the ideas in Walden 2. They're called the Federation of Egalitarian Communities. They're probably a little bit more left-wing than the folks that in the libertarian circles.
That's interesting you mentioned it, James, because some of the people that I'm really connecting with here in New Hampshire, in Amherst, particularly a man named Jack Shimmick, he's always been a very political focused activist, but he's really more into figuring how to live, you know, quality of life, voluntary communities, doing things for yourselves, growing food year-round, using private money, bartering even, new energy technologies. The idea that you can kind of communally take care of one another, you know, and so yeah, there are definitely strains, and I'm certainly a big advocate of that. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I think it's a tendency with libertarians, anyone who is advocating the supremacy of the individual, if you will, or individual choice, that tends to make people think atomistically that we're not a big part of life, you know, that we're not a big part of other people, and I agree with you that's a real challenge. And I feel that, you know, books are a part of the process by which you kind of move that forward to create. I'm going to give a presentation to mid-Michigan atheists and humanists here in the next couple of weeks. When you're a free thinker, it's not conducive to having a development of a community, in a sense, you know. But what I do sort of envision happening is I think that the humanistic community will have, like, a large number of diverse approaches, and that will become kind of like, I think there'll be some key characteristics of all that, and then I think that becomes the new universal religion, if you will. It just has all these variabilities that all these people have.
I think you're probably right. If you compare the cultural resilience of the United States to, you know, the folks in, you know, Iran, who have a lot more groundedness in what they, knowing absolutely what they believe and what the purpose in life is,
right,
but are so inflexible, you know, and so, and not dynamic in the same way that a more diverse and unsettling and uneasy kind of culture like the United States can be. Hopefully we'll be a little bit more flexible and diverse after next Tuesday, but at any rate, to the end of our half hour. But I also wanted to know if part of the Free Stater's agenda is to advance issues like reproductive rights and cognitive liberty issues like drug legalization. And, you know, because those are issues that we are increasingly seeing in the transhumanist milieu as the places where contemporary politics touch up against. You know, if you want to have smart drugs in the future, well, you got to legalize pot, because you can't imagine a society where you would have access to these cognitive enhancements unless you were had more other liberties as well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Part of what my plan is, actually, with this book, which is available, by the way, through Lulu. I mean, it's Lulu is a print-on-demand format.
And it's relatively cheap. New Pilgrim Chronicles from Lulu.com.
Yeah, that's fine, and they'll get to the actual site if they're interested. But I'm interested in that, definitely. I have actually an organization. I haven't really done anything with it, but one of my ideas is is kind of a humanistic spiritual growth organization, and it's called the Free Community of Reason. There's a website out there for that. My idea there is sort of, and this is just kind of loose off the cuff, is sort of an association of a confederation of book discussion groups. You know, that we the books tend to be politically and philosophically focused, but I have talked to people in the Free State, at some of the meet and greets, and there is an interest in developing some of those lines. Reproductive freedom, unfortunately, I'm afraid that a lot of the we still kind of have this kind of right winger. I mean, I even refer to that in my book in quotes. The empire is always right, that type of view, and they tend to be pro-war and pro-life, which of course is the ultimate contradiction. But there hasn't emerged yet a really substantial choice movement. There hasn't really emerged a substantial reason movement. But I hope to be part of those. Yes, definitely. I mean, there are a lot of people who think that way there. Yes, yes.
Cool.
And yeah, AI. I mean, that's exciting stuff. I can't wait.
Well, it's been very nice talking to you, Brian. We've been speaking with Brian Wright. He's the author of New Pilgrim Chronicles, which is a travelogue and philosophical rumination about the Free State Project, which is a project where libertarians are moving en masse to New Hampshire to try to change the political culture of New Hampshire in a more libertarian direction. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@IEET.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at IEET.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy high-tech and yet radically democratic future.